there's a certain amount of people that already have a fighter pilot mindset, that already work the way fighter pilots work. They're just that way. There's just high-performing individuals that are just very good at being highly effective. What they need is the same across their entire team. You need people that maybe aren't naturally insightful or intentional, and you need to develop them. And as a fighter pilot, that's the environment we created. We didn't create one or two high performers. We needed an entire environment of individuals that were well above average. That's that old analogy between the championship team or the team of champions. And being a fighter pilot is very much being on a championship team. We would be successful 98% of the time because the challenge for leaders and high performers is it's all well and good having one person who's amazing in the company. They can only go as fast as the system around them. A part of life is the upside of being a high performer is individually you're very productive. The downside is you're normally a terrible leader and you're normally a terrible team player. And that's a challenge.
Welcome. I'm your host, Dino Cattaneo, and you're listening to Authentic Leadership for Everyday People, the podcast where we investigate the connection between effective leadership and authenticity. If you're looking for inspiration and tips on how to become a better leader by being your true self, you're in the right place. Last week, we talked to Greg Bedard about the current state of journalism and why he chose to be not just a journalist, but to launch his own independent sport news website, bostonsportsjournal.com. Today, our guest is Chris Boo Bukusis, a former fighter jet pilot for the Royal Australian Air Force. After being forced to leave the Air Force for health reasons, Boo realized that what he really loved about being a fighter jet pilot was the training and the mindset he received, and that translated very well into regular organizations or just the world of business. So, after launching two successful businesses, he acquired Afterburner, a company that specializes in training organizations on how to apply the fighter jet pilot mindset in a corporate environment. In our conversation, we discuss what that means and the key principles. What you will hear are not the trite stereotypes about toughness that usually you hear when people talk about applying military principles to corporate leadership. We'll hear about outcome-focused leadership, self-awareness, credibility, trust, and approachability, among other things. And at the end of our conversation, Boo also shared a couple of practices that you can start immediately to apply those principles to your own leadership. Enjoy the show. Welcome, Boo. Introduce yourself to my listeners, and you can use as little or as much time as you want.
Awesome. Well, Dino, thanks so much for having me here. My name is Boo. My real name is Christian Bukusis, but I ended up with this name like many of us do when we have a career as a fighter pilot, and that's how I started my life. Ever since the age of five, my very first air show, which for me was in the late 70s, early 80s, the sound, the noise, the smells, the everything that assailed the senses really imprinted a memory, and it gives me a, as I reflect on life, it gives me this kind of insight into how powerful experiences can be in terms of creating memories, and particularly at impressionable ages. And so that was a 16-year journey for me, 16 years from the first moment I made a decision to be a fighter pilot, and then I became one when I had my first mission flying in a single-seat fighter when I was 21 years of age. So very exciting, great career, 11 years. I've been out for 20 years. And I flew, as my accent might give me away, in the Royal Australian Air Force. I lived in the United Kingdom. I flew in the Royal Air Force as well before, unfortunately, being diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder, which meant I could no longer fly. And that was, I guess, forcibly ejected into the world of business. And probably for 20 years, I've been a reluctant businessman, a frustrated former fighter pilot with an unrequited love for being a fighter pilot. And really, yeah, just applying the mindset and the way of working I was taught as a fighter pilot into a number of successful businesses. Just found out the business I founded 20 years ago managed to turn over $155 million this year in the humanitarian sector. So my first business was humanitarian in nature, helping rebuild after Afghanistan. And then I moved into property development, building a high-rise hotel using an innovative technology that we invented, moved into publishing. And almost 10 years ago, came across a company called Afterburner that was founded in the US 27 years ago, which basically uses the techniques fighter pilots use in business. And when I experienced a moment watching one of these presentations from a friend of mine who was doing it in Australia. I just had this epiphany. It wasn't the flying I learned as a fighter pilot. It wasn't the warfare. It wasn't all the stuff that's very obvious to anyone looking at a fighter pilot. It was the cognitive model that I was trained in, the way of thinking, the way of controlling emotion, the way of being highly productive but safe at the same time, of being a highly collaborative leader, of being very impact and outcome focused. All of these intangibles as a fighter pilot actually translate very effectively into business. And now I recently acquired the company Afterburner in the US. I now live in the US and I'm in my last chapter, which is until I fall off the perch, help people have the benefit of this mindset and way of working for themselves to achieve their life goals as well as their business goals, because I've been very fortunate in pretty much ticking every box I could possibly imagine for my life. And it's a nice place to be to as I start to tick over into my 50th year.
You had like a really long journey, as you mentioned, through the Air Force, different businesses, and then this epiphany that you were talking about in terms of how to apply your training as a pilot to be a more effective leader. Once you got out of the Air Force and you started getting into the world of business, when did you start being intentional about the way that you want to lead?
So as I reflect, I understand what intentionality is. But when I was young and in the Air Force, I just lived in an intentional environment and I just did what I was told to do. And very much at that age, as a late teenager into your early 20s, you really do just need to be told. I mean, it's as much as we think we know everything and as much as we think we know better, there's a lot of life out there that a lot of people have experienced that sometimes if you just shut up and take it all in, it sets you up for an accelerated journey later on. So you have to understand that at a fighter pilot, every single thing we do is mission focused. Everything we do is intentional. It is about getting into the airplane, through the mission, into the target area, back out, successfully hitting the target or successfully clearing the airspace of enemy fighters and coming home without losing anyone. So there's nothing that you do as a fighter pilot that doesn't have intention. I mean, that's not true. As a fighter pilot, and particularly the fighter pilots like myself, where there's only one seat in the airplane, the squadron still needs to be administered. So there's normally 13 to 17 pilots in a squadron. No one else to do all the administration or all the other work. There's one admin officer. So we have what they call a secondary duty. That often felt like it lacked intention. That was just work, right? That's just grinding things out, updating documents and publications, being the navigation officer, being the social officer, making sure the refrigerator is full of Snickers bars and Coca-Cola. There's just an infinite amount of administration you need to be a fighter pilot. And we used to call those the SLJs, the shitty little jobs. And whilst they're not necessarily intentional in that they deliver a very tangible outcome for the effort, you understand that without them, the foundational work, the intentional work doesn't happen. And we're talking about an environment here that was fine-tuned through necessity, right? It wasn't fine-tuned through research papers, through case studies. You know, it was refined through thousands of men and women getting lost in accidents or in combat. So the system that we created and the way of thinking, the way of working, it's just impossible to create it outside that environment because you just can't have a university or a college that has a consequence of death as the output for not doing it right. You know what I mean? And that's where that old saying, you don't know what you don't know. And with Afterburner, we've created a really unique way of distributing our intellectual property through seminars. But most people who are successful and do well still probably haven't unlocked their full potential. And there's a certain amount of people that already have a fighter pilot mindset, that already work the way fighter pilots work, and they didn't need any training. They're just that way. There's just high-performing individuals that are just very good at being highly effective. But what they need is the same across their entire team, right? You need people that maybe aren't naturally insightful or intentional, and you need to develop them. And as a fighter pilot, that's the environment we created. We didn't create one or two high performers, we needed an entire environment of individuals that were well above average. And it's that old analogy, you know, between the championship team or the team of champions, and being a fighter pilot is very much being on a championship team. And we would dominate. We would be successful 98% of the time, because the challenge for leaders and high performers is it's all well and good having one person who's amazing in the company, but they can only go as fast as the system around them, right? And the better the system is, the more empowered that leader is. And the universe being the universe, and yin and yang being, you know, a part of life, is the upside of being a high performer is individually you're very productive. The downside is you're normally a terrible leader, and you're normally a terrible, terrible team player. And that's a challenge.
So you said a couple of things that are actually at the core of some of the questions that I had for you. By the time you are seated in a single seat fighter jet, you have gone through a screening process where the people who make it at that level are definitely A-plus type people, right? There's a really rigorous selection. In business, as much as we would all love to have teams are fully A-plus people, the reality is that the competition for A-plus people is massive. And so in this environment, the leaders who are going to win are the people who are able to elevate the performance of the C-plus and the B-plus and are able to work with them. As you transition from working with a team of elite A-plus people to, you know, as you got into business, having a whole different set of stakeholders in your team's peers and employees, what were some of the key adjustments that you had to make?
Look, I think, and this is only something I've just sort of, again, realized as of late, like I'm doing more in the leadership space. Normally it was in productivity and team performance, but what you learn, and certainly what we've learned at Afterburner, you know, working with 3,500 companies, you know, some of the biggest on the planet, is eventually, and at the moment, teams are actually getting pretty good. Like team performance is getting better than what it was. And it's highlighting more and more leadership deficiencies. And now we're seeing globally poor leadership is getting highlighted, right? The ability to make decisions in leadership without transparency, like the old days, has disappeared. So every leader, their decisions are captured live, they can be dissected, and the sociopathic kind of leadership that has defined leadership over the years, because, you know, if you thought about it, who'd really want to be a leader of a country? I mean, what a tough job that would be. So you've got to have something wrong with you, I think, to be a leader. But unfortunately, that style of leadership is being observed at a very mass market, as is toxic masculinity. And this style of leadership, I used to say in the Air Force, it's being an effective leader and an asshole is actually pretty easy. Being an effective leader and being a decent human is very hard. It's a lot more work. It's a lot more effort. And I think what happens is we, with the hustle culture, and where, you know, we have a culture of it's there for the taking and you just take it, you actually end up creating pretty poor leaders. So one of the challenge, I think, when people say leadership is it's just this one big carpet term, like leadership. And leadership is a little more nuanced than that. Again, I always use my career as a fighter pilot to anchor this, because there's no more leadership training or no more exposed leadership than being a fighter pilot. Yeah, like you literally fly about 400 missions before you're qualified. Every one of those is assessed within an inch of its life. Everything is recorded. You always have an instructor. You're always being graded. You are under the microscope the entire time. You learn fast through that environment. If you look what the military does, the first thing it does is it breaks you down and tries to create an awareness of yourself. So you very quickly become aware of your strengths and weaknesses. You're put out in the cold, you're digging holes, you're running around with rifles, you're effectively being a soldier. And you start in that environment when you're very fatigued, you start to see, hey, here's some things I'm good at and here's some things I'm not good at. And one of the things I wasn't good at is I'm a skinny Mediterranean kid, right? I had like body fat of 4% back then. I was so fit. The cold just did me in. If I was cold, I was not functioning well and I was not a good leader. I used to be disappointed in myself about that. And it took me many years to come to terms with that was okay. I was still an adequate leader, but not a great leader. That there to me is a form of leadership that I call leading in the moment. So leading in a moment is where you're aware of the need to be a leader and you are either doing a good or a bad job. Hopefully you're aware of it. Some people have no awareness. And leading in the moment is very personal. It's very about how you show up. It's understanding that you have this range of alter egos between being a really great version of yourself, the average version, and a really terrible version of yourself. And that everyone around you is in there leading in the moment as well. And the moment is about situational awareness. So really understanding self in the context of your environment is what leading in the moment is about. So that's kind of where you start your career, right? And you don't have a lot of awareness because you're placed in a lot of situations that you've never experienced before, right? And what they're trying to assess is if they give you some theory and they paint a picture for you, whether you're in the moment, you're able to pick it up and run with it. So you've got the ability to learn quickly. Then the second form of leadership, and this is the leadership that I think is done particularly poorly, I think, in business. And there's a term that we seem to be getting more and more from our clients, which is, can you show us a zero authority leadership model, how to lead a no authority leadership business? And it's like, well, there's no such thing. There's two mutually exclusive terms, no authority and leadership. I mean, you may as well ask me to, you know, ride a unicorn in playing Nirvana song. I mean, it's just not going to happen, right? But I understand the intent of what they're trying to say. What they're saying is, how do we have a leadership model which is inclusive, highly engaged, where people aren't being told what to do? And that's the style of leadership that I call outcome-focused leadership. And what outcome-focused leadership is to say, anyone in the organization can lead an outcome. And as a fighter pilot, that would have been a mission. So I can be the commanding officer of a squadron, so I'm responsible for all 250 men and women. But in that mission, I am leading an outcome to the target. I can be a brand new pilot, and I could be leading that outcome, and the commanding officer might be my wingman. In that outcome, the leader of the organization is subordinate to me as the leader of the mission. So I think when people say, I want a no authority leadership model, I think what they're trying to say is, I want a flexible authority leadership model is more accurate. And the only way you could do that is if you're absolutely crystal clear around what outcomes are in the organization, about what your strategic objectives are in the short, medium, and near term. What are you trying to achieve today, this week, this month, this quarter, this year? And most organizations underinvest in that. They create big outcomes and big objectives, but what happens there is it gets blended up and mixed with the third leadership situation, which is leading people. Now, the challenge with leading people, which is a very subjective form of leadership compared to outcome-focused leadership, which is very objective, is we just create a melting pot of ambiguity, of confusion, because people are looking for direction, but the numbers haven't been distilled down to that level. So again, let's use the fighter pilot model. And during operations, whether it was Southern Watch, Northern Watch, whether it's full combat, you know, what would happen is you would have a coalition operating every day, flying maybe 200 missions from your 25 different countries. So within that, you've got 25 countries of people leadership, of culture, of all this. You just said, Dino, you're just in Italy. I flew with the Italians, the Sea Harrier pilots after every mission. It's pasta, it's Chianti, it's a real social experience being a fighter pilot in Italy. But in the mission, we're all very focused. We have very clear, tangible outcomes, where we need to be, what time we need to be, what the target is. So every day, we're socially and from a people leadership perspective, highly effective because we just built trust and credibility by leading outcomes together and everyone being where they needed to be within 5 seconds. So when we talk about leadership, we have to ask that question. Are you talking about leading moments? You're talking about personal leadership and self-awareness? Are you talking about leading outcomes, which is very tangible and discrete, where we measure everything? Or the most complex form of leadership, which is people leadership, where we're talking about EQ, we're talking about intangibles, politics, relationships, which is never going to be easy. And people leadership is very much around challenging belief structures and all the cognitive biases we have. So that's a very difficult style of leadership, and it's always going to be imperfect. However, if we're good at leading in the moments, if we're good at self-leadership, if we're good at leading outcomes in that we deliver what we commit to, we create credibility and trust, and then that makes people leadership that much easier because at least we're starting with a platform where if there is ambiguity, well, I trust this person, they're credible, I'm going to give them some rope, then also allows the leader to deliver on an intangible outcome, which just goes further to reinforce credibility and trust. And the only way you can do that at a people leader level is through humility, credibility, and approachability, which also happen to be the three driving leadership outcomes for the United States Air Force Academy. Because if you think about it, you know, how awesome a leader are you if you're humble and approachable and you're really credible? I mean, that's, if you ask people, what is it about other leaders that inspire you? That's generally what most people say.
I love that you brought up these three attributes from the U.S. Air Force, because there's a lot of very bad literature around things that we can learn from the military, how to be a leader. A lot of it goes to the toughness, the machismo of it. When you go and start digging deeper, you found out that there's a lot more subtlety, a lot more nuance. What would be the most surprising thing about leadership as a fighter pilot to somebody who is only aware of the stereotypes?
So it's a two-way street there. So what veterans and I do help veterans with transitions, it's, you mentioned it before, it's the fact that you're playing with a deck of cards that's all the same, that every deck you have has gone through the same training program, has the same understanding of what good looks like. There's a structure around it, right? And the type A personality. So if you try and take that level of structure and that type A personality into business, yeah, it doesn't work, right? There's a conflict there. So you'll never, ever be as productive, as safe, or as effective as the military. And I don't care what business you're in, you're never going to be that effective because you do not have the budget and you do not have the ability to invest that heavily in the training that you need to be at that level of proficiency. It's $15 million to train one fighter pilot. So that's the key. So to be that consistent with your leadership, particularly that frontline layer, is difficult in business. However, you can take the good bits out of it. And that's why, you know, we try and articulate it as a cognitive model. So, and fighter pilots think differently from the military. We have a parallel system. So we had to create it because we did operate the same way the military operated. That's why the US Navy and the US Air Force and all the air forces in the world operate the pointy jets, not the Army, because it's a totally, Army is very granular and has a certain speed, the speed of a vehicle. The Air Force has the speed of a fighter jet. So it's a totally different way of thinking, right? And it's that speed model where we have immense speed and vast amounts of information. That's one of the most difficult problems for a human to solve. If I have a book and I've got to read everything and understand it, I need time. But if I don't have time, how do I read the book? And that's the challenge of that's even being selected as a fighter pilot. All you get, you just keep getting through the selection process. You have to write essays. You have to answer mathematical questions. You do spatial awareness. And you don't know what the balance is between how much you have to get through or how accurate you need to be. And I still don't know, but somehow you get selected if you manage to hit that balance. So being a fighter pilot is always a balance between quality and quantity. And there are trigger points where you get to a point where you're like, I'm about to make a decision where it's going to cost someone's life. Have I met the balance between quality and quantity? Do I have enough quality information? I don't have to have all of it, but have I got enough at least to keep going for another 5 miles or another 2 seconds? So you're always running this catalog of balance, quality, time, speed, information, and you manage to balance that most of the time and win 98%. And that's really the leadership world we're in now. I mean, with big data, we're swamped with results and swamped with how our businesses are being measured. And the speed of business is exponentially increasing because of whether you use Moore's model or whether you just look at the rate of automation, digitization, and adoption of AI, the speed at which a business leader needs to make decisions is significantly faster than it was even just pre-COVID. So what a great cognitive model to use. Where fighter pilot, you're trained to be a leader from the age of 19, so you implicitly understand leadership. Your DNA is operating in high speed, high technology environments where you're trying to create situational awareness, and that's the right information at the right time to empower good decisions. And the good decisions you make equal action, and the actions deliver the impact you want as a leader. And that's your job as an outcome-focused leader, to deliver an impact. So if you think of all of these different elements of being a fighter pilot, you start to see it's not the elements that you see in Top Gun. It's not the flying low level, getting shot at and running around the beach with your shirt off, either playing volleyball or football. It's actually the stuff you don't see in the movie. It's the training. It's the way they're thinking. It's how they're processing everything up to the point of the decisions that you make in a combat situation. I didn't have any awareness of that as a fighter. I had no idea. I didn't have any awareness of it as a business owner. I only had awareness of it the first time I saw an afterburner program, and it eloquently put the two worlds together. And even today, as we test this model against modern leadership thinking, and as you start to bring the woke layer into it, you know, the reality is the Air Force is actually pretty woke. Like, it is pretty open and accommodating. And as long as anyone in that organization is getting the job done, couldn't care less who you are, what you do. I mean, when I was in the Royal Air Force, if you're a female and you were self-conscious about your body image, and it was affecting your job, they would pay for a boob job if that made you feel better about yourself. If you wanted gender reassignment and it helped you with your job, they would pay for that. The organization didn't care, as long as you were effective. And the great thing about being effective and the great thing about being objective in business is nothing has been personal. It can't be. It just is. It's just the numbers are telling you the story. And you're able to create, you know, as a leader, one of the things you need to establish is, am I talking to the role that this person has in the organization, or am I talking to the person? And unless you clearly set that up as a leader beforehand, for the person, everything always feels personal. So part of being a leader is saying, okay, hey, let's come in, let's build a plan together. This is the plan for you as your role. We're going to have conversations about you in this role. And then we're also going to have conversations about you as a person, as a father, as a mother, as a parent. And we're going to split those two worlds apart, because then everyone shows up and understands when we're playing each role. So we don't allow the alphas to overrun the business meetings with all the chat and all the chest pumping. And we let the introverts have a turn. And then in the social environments, we can let the extroverts go to town, and the introverts can sit there and nurse their glass of wine or Coca-Cola in a corner. So all of these little nuances around human nature, you know, I think the fighter pilot community, through necessity, nailed it. Absolutely nailed it as an operating model.
That's great. So let's close this conversation. I like to give like little tips to my listeners. So what are a couple of things that somebody can do tomorrow morning to start evolving towards a more fighter pilot oriented style of leadership?
So the first thing is the outcome. What impact am I trying to make? So we're constantly, and this is the challenge with a lot of productivity books, it's all about the work, right? So we'll sit there and say, what's my to-do list? And that's, if you ask most people, most to-do lists don't get done, right? So the way that your brain works, it works in two different ways. It's thinking and doing. So when you're busy doing work, your thinking brain switches off. And that's why we're so busy today, because there's so much to do and so many alerts and so many notifications that I'm not thinking about what I'm doing. I'm just reacting, right? That's why fighter pilots have a wingman. One pilot's busy with their head in the radar and trying to find the bad guys, and they're like a basketball player on the court, and the other one is just sitting there trying to keep an eye on the big picture. They're doing all the thinking. And we have fluid leadership in that moment. And we're able to do it because both pilots implicitly understand the impact we're trying to make. So if you get off this podcast, the first thing you do is sit down and write three outcomes you want to achieve by the afternoon. Then you'll figure out the work. Like, it's easy. Like, you'll figure out how to get there. What you'll probably do is you'll pick three things that there's no way you're going to get done in a day. Then at the end of the day, you have to have what we call as a fighter pilot, a debrief. And a debrief can be personal and it can be collaborative, but it's very intentional. Without the outcomes defined, you cannot debrief. If you're just debriefing work, it's the same as a farrier making horseshoes back in 1917. You're just sitting there trying to engineer a better horseshoe. Meanwhile, the team next door is getting around with wheeled vehicles. So you've got to look at the outcome. So is the outcome, I'm trying to create a better mode of transport, or is the outcome, I'm trying to design a better shoe for a horse? Totally different, right? And that's where the innovation layer creeps in. So when you have a debrief, we call it the four-step Orca process, objective, result, cause, action. So you have to have the objective. Don't even write three things to get done in a day. Just give yourself one thing, right? and write it down. My objective is to achieve this, and this is how I know it's done. It could be done, not done. It could be yes or no. Or it might be I'm writing a book. I just want to get 10 pages written. But whatever you say you're going to do, you commit to it 100%, not 99%. Whatever you write down on that piece of paper is full binary commitment. Because if it's not, when you get to the end of the day, again, you can't debrief it because you said, well, I got distracted and I didn't. And that's normally what happens. That's normally why we don't get things done, because of all the distraction. And over time, what happens is you become very good at moderating your workflow. You start to understand what you can achieve in a day, what you can't achieve in a day. Then you start to layer in other people and you start to say, hey, here's, and you don't have to, for example, if it's a family environment, right? And you're a kid in the family and you want to increase your marks by 5%, for example. You don't come in and go, hey, mum and dad, my objective is to increase my marks by 5%. You don't have to say my objective. You can say, hey, it's my dream, it's my wish. Whatever it is, though, I really want to get this up 5%, right? Cool. What are you doing? What are you doing to get there? And you start to debrief the actions. And over time, because it's a cognitive model, it's a learning model, it uses the cerebellum, is you start to build habits by accident. You know, I'm accidentally habitual. I don't believe in atomic habits. I don't believe in the habits of highly effective people. I believe in your habits. Because you are different to the person next to you and their high-performing habits are just, I'm not the 5 a.m. club. There's no point. If I try and build those habits, I'm not going to be happy. I'm going to be ineffective. It doesn't suit my body clock. It doesn't work. So the problem with reading books about all these amazing habits is they're someone else's habits, not yours. And debriefing is the tool to create your highly effective habits. O is the objective, R is the result. So R is, hey, this is where I am now. You know, that so there's a bit of a gap. C is the core. What is the cause of the gap? Or just get curious. C for curious. Just ask yourself, why am I not there? But A is the most important one. And A is an action. And that action has to be able to be done in one day, immediately after the debrief or first thing in the morning. And those actions, initially, you're going to be too ambitious. Again, you're going to try and do something too big. You're going to say, I want to get fit. My action is go to the gym. I'm going to smash out 200 reps on the bench, right? And you're going to get there and you're going to be tired because we're all tired when we go to the gym. And you're just going to basically give up because it's too big. So set an action, which is I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to just get on the bench and I'm going to try and do as many reps as I can. And then surprise yourself. I'm going to go, I just want to get down, get on a bench, and I want to do 10. I just want to go and do 10, and then I'm going to go home because 10 is better than yesterday. And that's all a debrief is. It's just 1% better than yesterday. That's all you need. And 1% is not a lot. Like when you think of how much you do in a day, tweaking 1%, it's easy. The problem is you don't know what 1% to tweak because you're not doing this intentional reflection at the end of the day. And the purpose of that is to create what we used to call in the Air Force the accelerated learning curve. We all learn in life, right? But we have a choice. Most of us get our degree and our qualification and we kind of stop learning. We think we've arrived, yeah? And we just rely on social learning from that point on. But experiential learning is also important. And part of debriefing means, you know, I'm learning 1% per day and that's cumulative. So 1% on top of 1% on top of 1%. That's why there's people in the world that you look at them and you go, how on earth did you get so much shit done in your life? How are you in charge of so much? Because they didn't do any fighter pilot training. They didn't do any, but that's just the way they are. They are curious and intentional about every single thing they do as a matter of nature, not nurture. But you can build that muscle. You can build that skill using these debrief techniques. That's two. And the third, so create an objective, debrief it at the end of the day, or when you feel an emotional reaction in your life, frustrated, stressed, sit down and have a debrief and use a piece of paper and turn all your electronics off. And the third one is definitely the wingman concept, right? It is find someone to be accountable to, because particularly with the remote work environment, it's very hard to be accountable to yourself. Like we're not designed for that. We are designed to sit on our backsides, to conserve energy, because that's safe. We're designed to be in a cave, super low risk, because that's the safest way to keep propagating the species. So to get up and go hunting is generally only something we do, you know, when we're hungry. And the reason why we have adrenaline, the reason we have dopamine, oxytocin, the reason we have all this neurochemical makeup is to allow us to do stuff that on paper would be stupid. Could you imagine right now, like, man, I'm hungry. I'm in Miami. I'm going to walk down the street, go find something that has me in mind as a meal as well as I have it, and then use a sharpened stick and go and get this thing, right? It's bonkers. But that is that's our primal programming, right? We still have that brain. The human brain gets the least amount of energy in our brain. The limbic and the primal get the most. So the thing about having a wingman or someone to be accountable to is it just helps you stay committed. It just helps you because if you say to someone else, I am committed to getting this done, like the great thing about being human is, again, part of propagating the species is making sure that you've got a team of people around you, what we used to call a family or a village, where you need to be trusted. And the same rule applies. You say something, you do it, you're more trusted, right? So that's important. And when you have a wingman as a fighter pilot, we were all each other's wingman. You don't just have one. You do in combat, you generally team up. But most of the time, you're always accountable to someone. You might not even be great friends, your colleague. So often it's good to have someone as your wingman that's not a friend, someone that's actually just going to, you know, hold you to account. A friend is fine also. Or, you know, just get a coach. You can get an online coach these days for about $100 a week, you know, $100 a month even. Just someone that thing that you commit to, that objective, that debrief, you just do it with them. The key to being a great leader and the key to being successful, it's not really investing in your strengths. I mean, I think that's BS. It's actually mitigating your humanness. No one as a fighter pilot ever said to me, hey, Boo, these are your strengths. You need to lean into these, mate, and you'll be a better fighter pilot. No way. It was all, you need to be the best human at managing your human performance limitations. The better you are at not being distracted, at not paying attention, those moments of weakness, the better you are at stepping up, the more effective you are. What are your strengths, Boo? You're good at speaking. You're an intuitive fighter pilot, but those two, speaking too much in the airplane's bad. Being intuitive is going to get you killed. You know, you want to make sure that you've covered your blind spots. Most leadership and personal development is based on feeding weakness. It's not based on mitigating it. And yeah, I was at I was at an NBA team the other day, and I was in their lockers, and their lockers are like a lounge room. They're amazing, and they're not winning. And you're like, well, winning requires toughness. Like it does. It doesn't matter who you are. No one wins a marathon by being comfortable, right? And everything in life has a comparable element to it. Being a CEO is a tough job. Like it is tough to get there. You know, it's actually a pretty crappy job, to be honest. Like it's mostly problems. It's no credit for when it goes right, and it's all blame for when it goes wrong. So you can't escape the fact that you need some toughness, but you want that. I think Elon Musk said, I read a quote the other day. It was pretty interesting, actually. He said, the more tough things, I can't remember it exactly, but the gist of it was, the more tough things you do, the more disappointment you experience, the more normalized you become to it, and then life doesn't become stressful anymore. You've just become so resilient. And I think there's an element of truth to that. I think to be a leader, you need to be resilient without being tough, if that makes sense. You've got to be able to have the extra capacity when what normally annoys someone, you're able to absorb and come back as the alter ego, as your best self, and lead in that moment. If you're a leader that's busy doing stuff, if you're a leader that has a full calendar and you're just keeping updated, you cannot do that. You're not a good leader. Most leaders need to have an empty calendar, need to be doing nothing. So you've got the energy to lead and take all of that emotional baggage that everyone else is dealing with because they're so busy and navigate everyone through that.
Great. If somebody wants to find you or work with you, what are the best places online?
Just afterburner.com is the world I live in. That's the business I'm the CEO of. That is the undiluted fighter pilot mindset. That's where you'll find a whole bunch of men and women in their flight suits and running around helping people think differently. And my world is just callmeboo.com. I would give you my last name, B-O-U-C-O-U-S-I-S, and you can find me on LinkedIn, but that's why everyone calls me Boo, because when I was a trainee pilot doing my recruit
training, none of the drill sergeants could ever pronounce my name. All they could get to was the boo part, the first three letters, and then it stuck.
Great. Let's go to the personal part of it. First question is, what is an hobby or an interest that you have outside of work, and how has that impacted the way you work?
I've had many. I mean, I grew up with boats and sailing, and I became a qualified skipper. But again, it's one of those hobbies that requires attention. I flew as a civilian pilot. I had my own airplane, but again, you'd need to have a level of proficiency for that as well. I'm actually just starting to embark on a new hobby. I'm just starting kart racing and getting into motorsports as my next thing. I just like the detail behind it. It's something I can do with my son. So that's my hobby, fast becoming my hobby outside of this.
Great. Second question. This is my favorite question of the podcast. Every era has business cliches or expressions that have become so overused that they lose meaning. Which is the one that drives you crazy?
I'm an entrepreneur is what drives me crazy. is when someone utters those words, and if it's accompanied by, you know, a Lamborghini in the background or a business jet that hasn't ever flown in the last 10 years, but it's a photo inside of it. I think this overuse of what an entrepreneur is. You're not an entrepreneur until you can walk away from a business and it still works. The term I like and I think is more powerful now is a founder. I think a founder is someone that actually creates something with legacy. Entrepreneur has become this fast money, grabby, raise, you know, build and dump businesses. Like, it's become a toxic. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm embarrassed to use the word now. I just prefer to be a founder. So that word at the moment is I'm an entrepreneur, or we need to be more entrepreneurial. It seems that that now means we just need to be more toxic and give less of a shit about people.
Final question. I call it food for the body or food for the soul. And you can choose if you go the body route, a dish or a drink that it's particularly special to you right now. And if you go the soul route, it can be a book, a piece of music, a movie, a play, TV show, sculpture, whatever, something that right now feeds your soul.
I think for me, I have a complex family structure because I was divorced many years ago. I've got older kids in Australia. I've got a young son here, 17, 14, and 2. And for me, it's navigating that and really learning, you know, how to connect spiritually with those kids in a way that has meaning that they're not at yet in terms of their ability to consume or even comprehend spirituality. Does that make sense? So that to me right now is a really interesting journey. And also just understanding just the limitations of influence that you have and then how to do that. You know, I think one of the things about being in the military is you kind of have this service-mindedness, and it's very hard to kind of want things for yourself. You just want to be busy, so you like doing things like boating or driving race cars or whatever. But that's not soulful. I think soulful has to be, you know, something that's kind of intangible, and you feel it, but you can't define it because the complexity of the soul is just so mind-bogglingly huge. So to me, that's my thing at the moment is these three humans that I'm responsible for bringing into the world to make sure I can stay connected with them and that they can also be good humans in the world. We need more of those.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for a great conversation. It was great having you.
Thanks, Dino. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, find a friend who may like it and tell them that they should listen to it. Also, you may have listened to every single episode so far, in which case I'm really thankful, but most likely you haven't. So go find a few others and listen to them. As usual, if you really like the show, tell all your friends and post about it on social media. Every little bit helps. Make sure you're subscribed to the show on your favorite listening platform so you don't miss any episode. And if you listen on a platform that allows reviews and ratings like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, GoodPods, please leave us a stellar rating and a review. 5 stars. Stay tuned, because after the credits, I will play a song by Susan Cattaneo, one of Boston's best Americana singer-songwriters. For more information on the episode and all the links, go to the website al4ep.com, spelled with the number 4. You can email me at dino@al4ep.com. Please follow the podcast on whatever social platform you use. On Twitter and Instagram, the handle is @AL4EDP with the letter D. And on Facebook, look for Authentic Leadership for Everyday People. This episode was produced by me, Dino Cattaneo. It was recorded remotely with Squadcast and partially edited in the script, with additional edits by Pro Podcast Solutions. The theme music was composed, produced, and arranged by Nicolas Cattaneo, who also played keyboards and drums with Tony Savarino on guitar and Jesse Williams on bass. And now here's a song by Susan Cattaneo. It's called Red Light Kiss from her album Brave and Wild.
Love is easy when you're cruising on a Saturday night. Everything's alright. You got one hand on the wheel and the other holding mine. To today.